Blog Talk Radio.
The 2014 FIFA World Cup Review Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the FIFA World Cup Review Show here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. How is everyone doing? Great matches once again. And, you know, oh, my God, you know, we're talking about someone right now that had an inkling, an idea about what was going to happen within Group B. And you know what? We can call him Kreskin now because of this great prediction.
I think Brazil have everything in it to go all the way to the final, to be quite honest with you. It's a different, I mean, and I've spoken to this to many people in Europe, and playing in South America is a whole different Philippines. It's just completely different.
Yeah.
The environment's completely different. And when European teams, Spain already experienced it, and when they went into that final in Maracana, they got hit by a train wreck right there. I mean, it was absolutely, you know, something that hit them right between the eyes, and they didn't know how to react to it. But then again, I mean, it's right now 6 months away. But right now, if you were to tell me which of the two best teams in Group B based on their performances recently, I'd say Netherlands and Chile.
And ladies and gentlemen, that expert, that Kreskin, is the one and only Juan Arango. That was on my World Cup draw review show back in December 6th of 2013. Juan is calling from Rio de Janeiro, down in Brazil. Juan, you were right, my friend. It's unbelievable what we just saw from Spain, not just getting smoked by the Dutch, but the Chileans putting out a 2-0 victory, and they knock off the defending World Cup champions. Whoop. And maybe we have, Juan now here. Let's see what happens. A little bit of an issue with the thing here. Hold on 1 second. We will try and get Juan back up here as fast as possible. So let's see here. Okay, Juan, do we have you?
You got me whenever you want, man.
All right. No, just a little issue with the system here, but we got you on now finally, Juan. And boy, oh boy,
no, it's all good, man.
It's been fantastic to just talk about, my God, what the heck happened. And you were right, Spain looked like, you know, they got hit by a truck, a big Chilean truck, and it just looked incredible what happened. And boy, you were correct.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. But I mean, it's been talked about quite a bit, especially down here in Brazil, that Spain coming into the Confederations Cup, as a matter of fact, wasn't the same Spain that you were seeing in 2010 and in the Euros back in 2012 either. There was a little bit of a dynamic missing, a couple of moments where you started to see Spain not be Spain anymore, and some of that core, of course, being Barcelona not being Barcelona as much as it was at one point. You didn't see the dynamic of Xavi anymore. You didn't see him being one of those players that was running at people, that was going and chasing the ball when the ball wasn't in Barcelona or Spain's possession. There's a lot of speculation as far as that's concerned, and I think that it was exposed even further, not just in this match, but in the match against the Netherlands, where you saw a back line, that center-back pairing of Piqué and Sergio Ramos beaten with long balls behind their back, and you saw guys like Iron Robin being able to run at him. You saw guys in Chile also running at him too. So, I mean, you did see that whole little issue of them being outworked in the middle as well. So there's you know, quite a lot of things that have been talked about, in addition to Diego Costa just being that round peg trying to get into a square hole.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, Diego Costa looked like he was lost in all that space. I mean, we've never seen, or at least, you know, they had a great run, let's be honest, that he had two European championships, the winning the first World Cup in 2010 down in South Africa. But these last two games in the group stage, they looked lost. At times, they looked very, well, let's be honest, they looked very beatable, and the Dutch were able to get behind them. Chileans were able to get their goals. I thought that they probably could have scored more than just the two, and Chile looked fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of that whole difference in preparation. I mean, Jorge Sampaoli, when, you know, pretty much the groups were already announced back in December, he started preparing, you know, friendlies against the Dutch, friendlies against England, Germany. I mean, it was pretty heck. I mean, you're like, wow, you know, are you sure you're going to be in good shape? And that was another thing. I was watching it with some people, and people were saying, damn, Chile looked really fit, because it was just the fact that you saw them in the 90th minute pressing and still imposing their style of play like they were in the first 15, 20 minutes. So, I mean, a great deal about the fitness of that club.
No, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, when you've got a national team like Chile that wants to take on the best of Europe to make themselves better, because I think we've seen a little nativity with Uruguay on how they played against Costa Rica in that first game. I mean, you saw Chile there prepared. They knew what they were getting themselves into, and they wanted to make a statement, and this is what they did. I mean, a tough match against Australia, but, you know, give them credit because they were able to stick, you know, to just stick with the game plan, even though Australia was giving them some problems. But in this game, Spain just looked like they gave up.
You're right, because after a certain point, it kind of did look like they gave up. I'm trying to think, maybe around the 68th, 75th minute thereabouts, that you saw Chile now starting to hold the ball more. They were more pushing Spain towards their end, while throughout, you know, a good portion of the match, you saw Spain with the ball, looking for spaces, couldn't find the middle, would go out wide, bring it back in, do whatever, and they still couldn't find that clear shot from outside.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It was extremely telling. I mean, Pedro was one of these other options too, man. But you know what? Seeing Xavi Alonso as well, you know, be subbed out, and also Jeremy also not being in the lineup, starts to see a changing of the guard for Spain as well. I mean, three players that were essential in their run since 2009, 2010, actually, yeah, since 2010, you see these guys now starting to be looked at, well, okay, fine, we've got to start looking at other players and other individuals that can really make a difference for us for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the two questions I have for you about this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably one for Chile and one probably maybe against Spain. The one is this for Chile, because Alexis Sanchez plays for Barcelona. And obviously, mm-hmm. you don't want to say, you know, maybe he was doing his own scouting report for Chile when the draw was done. But, you know, because he plays for Barcelona, he plays in La Liga. Do you think maybe he helped the coaching mm-hmm. staff game plan for Spain? But at the same time, because Carlos Puyol retired from international duty for Spain, did that hinder the defensive side for Spain?
I think Xabi Alonso said it really well. He was saying after the match today, he said, you know what, this team's lacking desire. They're lacking that fire now that they had at one point. And he's right. You know, he is right. You did see that team. They would move the ball, but that really never translated into significant possession in certain stages. You needed to start putting some pressure on Club Bravo. You started seeing Bravo getting shots on goal more towards the 80th, 85th minute when Chile pretty much had the match in control, and those shots were mostly from outside. There's other players in Chile that do play. I mean, Claudio Bravo plays for Real Sociedad, so he's very familiar with all. Vargas plays for Valencia, same thing too. So I mean, you do have players that are very staying plays, and many might not play there, but they play in leagues like the Premier League. They play in leagues like Brazil, and they see the Spanish league day in, day out. So they're very familiar with some of these players. At the same time, it's this great scouting by Jorge Sampaoli, who was, you know, right there when Marcelo Bielsa was at his side during the 2010 World Cup. He's been one of his disciples, so he does have someone talking into his ear that knows some of these teams, albeit that he's getting ready to take over at Olympique Marseille. But overall, I mean, you got to give Chile a lot of credit. And like you said, Alexi, for me, the man of the match was Carlos Arangues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Great scouting from the coaching staff. Great play all around for Chile. And as we see now here at Group B table, you're excited about that one. Easy now on the easy on the drinks, man. Come on, we need you next time. But, you know, Netherlands and Chile, both with 6 points, Netherlands plus 5, Chile plus 4, Australia minus 3, Spain with a minus 6 on the differential. I mean, you know, obviously Spain's going to be fighting for pride along with Australia, but still, to see the Netherlands and Chile top this group, this is a big moment for Chile, as you know, because
I mean,
everyone always – yeah, go ahead.
That's actually – yeah, that's – No. I mean, what you were saying, you're exactly right. I mean, it's interesting because here the main top team came blue against Chile is Brazil want to play against.
Absolutely.
To the extent that many here in Brazil have been able to go and take this match. I mean, I was out on my balcony right after I came back, and they're still, you know, throwing up fireworks and the Horizontes. So it shows you who they were rooting for.
Oh, absolutely. And I think as many of us, we always talk about how great Brazil is and Argentina is, and we also talk about how great Uruguay is. I mean, you know, those are probably the 2-3 top countries in South America when you talk about the football. And a few of these, and like, you know, Colombia had a moment here and there as well. But, you know, to see Chile coming up and rising the way they are, especially during a World Cup, that really says a lot about how they're going to be playing. And now, you know, obviously it's a formality. You know, you try to win the group, obviously, against the Netherlands in the next week or so. But how far do you think Chile can go in this World Cup and maybe upset a couple of national teams?
I mean, right now, they could go pretty deep. Maybe quarterfinals, maybe even semis. I mean, everybody's been talking about how they've been able to really impress. I mean, many of the European press are saying, well, you know, I look forward to seeing how Chile are going to play in the World Cup. I'm looking forward to seeing how they're going to perform. So, I mean, that's it's something that really, at this point, really depends solely on what they can do and how they can continue this form. Obviously, one of the biggest surprises of Chile is seeing how quickly Arturo Vidal has been able to, you know, been able to contribute. You know, it looked like 3-4 weeks ago that he wasn't even going to be in the World Cup, and now you see him running all over the place for Jorge Sampaoli. So, I mean, we have to see how far this team goes. Obviously, there's some issues as far as cards are concerned. I think they, as well as the Netherlands, are going to try and avoid those players that will be, you know, that are in yellow card caution, to not have them miss out on one of the quarterfinals, because any little mistake in that particular end can end up meaning you're going home.
Absolutely, Juan. Juan, once again, you're Kreskin here. You did it again. on your prediction during that World Cup draw review show. Thanks again. Enjoy the rest of the time down in Brazil, and hope to bring you back on another time.
No problem, man. I'm looking forward to being here for a while. And, man, you know what? The thing is, it's so nice down here. I may not want to come back.
You should be hanging out with some of the ESPN people on the Copacabana Beach, that's for sure, because that's a heck of a location
for
the studio.
I was with Adrian Healy the other day.
Well, oh, yeah, I saw that on Twitter. Yeah, you and Healy were hanging out. That was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. He was here. He was here doing the Algeria-Belgium match.
Right,
and,
yeah.
You know, just catching up, man. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. And I mean, it's interesting, you know. So, yeah, I was glad to see him, you know. Really, really, really glad to see him, as far as concerned.
Absolutely. Well, listen, enjoy the rest of the time down there and hope to catch up with you soon. Thanks again, Juan, and enjoy the rest of your trip, tournament down there.
As always, man, thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. It's Juan Arango, South American journalist, knows everything about South American soccer, South American football, as he gave us, of course, back in December, the big prediction that Spain could be eliminated. And boy, oh boy, they got eliminated. I'm telling you right now, what a great moment to see for Chile. A tough moment for Spain, and they are the first defending champion in a World Cup to get eliminated in the group stage, losing their first two games. So, boy, oh boy, that was something special. Once again, this is the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, FIFA World Cup Review Show, Day 7. Later on, we're going to have head coach James Galanis on, talking about Australia. James Galanis does talk and help out with women's soccer here in the States with that NWSL, I should say, that whole setup. But he's also from Australia, and he'll give us a helping hand at 8:30 tonight, 5:30 Pacific, of course. And Carter Kirshner will be joining us around that time at 8:30 to talk Australia and the Netherlands. Let's get on with the next matchup right away here. Of course, Cameroon just finished losing to Croatia by a final of 4-0. And, you know, I want to talk about what I just saw. And I know you saw it too. I know you all saw it too, with what Alex Song did to Mandzukic. And boy, oh boy, how embarrassing was that? How embarrassing was that to see? I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like that in my life. I've never seen anything like that in my entire life. When you see a national team, a world-class player like Alex Song, and what does he do to try and stop a counter? He's attacking behind Mandzukic in their end of the field. And he comes out. Now, at first, it looked – I mean, I don't know what happened at first, because we're seeing the cameras watching a Croatian attacker with the ball moving it up the field. Moving it up the field. And then all of a sudden, the whistle blew, and you're thinking to yourself, well, what's the point of him blowing the whistle? You know, you've got to allow play to continue. You know, that's advantage, if anything. That has to be advantage. And then you see the red card. And then you're like, what the heck happened? And then you see it on the replay. Alex Song chasing after Mandzukic. And he makes a fist with his right hand. And all he does is strike Mandzukic from behind, either from the back of his head or the back of his right shoulder, to make him fall down, to make him stop their attacking run. Cameroon down a man because of Alex Song. Cameroon down a man all because of Alex Song's stupidity. And it's terrible. It's just disgusting to see that. How is it possible a national team like Cameroon, who is one of the good sides in African football, Cameroon is actually one of the top national teams in the CAF. How is that possible that they went out there and looked terrible? You know, there was a story that I saw on Twitter where the Cameroonian Football Federation or Football Association was either late with their paychecks or they were being held back. And what is it about this national team that it's, they're on the verge of going into the World Cup and they have this problem in front of them? They have this problem in front of them. And I understand, you know, look, I want to be paid too. I want to be paid just like anybody else does. But I mean, you know, you're also being paid by your national team. I mean, excuse me, by your club sides. I mean, you know, you're not going to go cry foul now unless you spent it all for no reason. But how is it possible that they looked like crap these two games? And now Alex Song put his national team down to 10 men. And then, you know, I mean, that's, I mean, you know, you want to talk about the Pepe headbutt on Mueller for, you know, against Germany. You know, yeah, that's bad because it was more stupidity than it was anything like what we just saw with Alex Song. This is like assault and battery. This was a stupid thing to do by a world-class player that had no business causing that type of foul. No right to do that whatsoever because you're trying to prevent numbers from going down to your side of the field. That is just wrong. Flat out wrong. How disgraceful was this? You know, I was talking with Colin Udo, who's a journalist in Africa for Nigeria, but of course he covers CFA news as well because, you know, this man is at the top of his game and everything, covering football in Africa. What happens? He has no words to describe what he just saw. He's not happy for what he has saw. That's a black eye for African football, what Alex Song just did. That was disgraceful. It was terrible. That should never have happened at all. And look, I said to myself that, you know, I figured Croatia was going to come out strong and Croatia was going to put a couple of goals past them. Obviously, they got one early in the first half. But, you know, when you got someone on the other side sent off, it makes it a lot better. And the truth of the matter is that it was just a disgrace. What Song did. I'll keep going. I don't care. That was disgraceful. In the 40th minute, Alex Song sent off and Cameroon down to 10 men. The first goal of that match was in the 11th minute by Olich. Great, great ball. Great job by Olich to get in front of his defender, and he converts. And then what happens? That red card. And what did I say on Twitter? Right now, if you are Croatia, you make timely runs and you bury that ball every chance you have. Don't get cute. Cameroon is not interested. And you know what? They weren't interested at all from the start of it. They may look like they had a decent start. Let's be honest. For some stupid reason, they looked like they didn't want to be there. This is a disgrace. And, you know, people were saying on Twitter, basically, The CAF has to change their structure for World Cup qualifying. So like a team like Egypt that dominated their group and unfortunately lost in that second round final of the goal aggregate series because they played against, you know, they should have gone ahead. They should have been already in this World Cup. You know what it's time for? Maybe it's time for a tweak. Maybe Egypt should have been in this World Cup. Maybe they should have replaced Cameroon. It's not going to happen because why? Because Cameroon had the right because that's the, you know, Cameroon had the right to advance because of their group that they won in. But the truth of the matter is this. The truth of the matter is that Cameroon disgraced Africa, and, of course, Alex Song disgraced his national team, his coach, his teammates, and everyone from Cameroon. That was ridiculous. That is terrible. And if it's always going to be a money situation, if it's always going to be a money situation that's going to prevent Cameroon from playing beautiful football, beautiful soccer, then they shouldn't be here. Then they should not be here. If that is going to cause them to not concentrate on the matter at hand. And it's a real shame. You know, Senegal then should be allowed to come and take over for Cameroon. Egypt should have came here to take over for Cameroon. I mean, look what the Ivory Coast has done. You know, there's been problems. You know, they soldier along. I mean, Ivory Coast, I mean, it took them that qualifying for the World Cup to settle, you know, rivalry inside their own country, to, you know, to stop a civil war. And look at them now. Why is it that Cameroon has to play like this? It was ridiculous. But let's not get away from what Croatia did. Croatia played brilliantly. Croatia did what they had to do to go out and to get the 3 points, and now they have an opportunity to challenge Mexico in the final group stage day, which will be on Monday, June the 22nd. Excuse me, Monday, June the 23rd. That's my bad. They'll have an opportunity to go out and to challenge Mexico for the second position in the group. Do I think Brazil's going to advance? I do. Not because they're going to get favorable calls from the referees, because Cameroon does not look interested. They may say the right things that, oh, we're going to find a way to upset the host nation and we'll make them not advance into the next round. But I'm telling you right now, I don't see Cameroon doing that. I see Brazil playing them out of the park, whether it's halfway interested or all the way interested. Just 50-60% of Brazil will definitely defeat and take out Cameroon because they don't need to go 100%. That's how I see this situation happening. This is how I see this situation coming around, because I'm telling you right now what I just saw from this supposed African power was a disgrace of a performance. And Alex Song, a world-class player from Africa, from Cameroon, disgracing himself, his national team, and his country, and the World Cup. That was terrible. You want to call it a tomahawk chop? Go right ahead. You want to say, hey, it looks like, you know, he could have had a club in his hand to knock out Mandzukic. You could say that too, because he deserves it, because that is not what it's all about here. We could have said Cameroon played hard. Cameroon played like a heart of a lion. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough for them today. That's not the case here. That's not the case, and it's a sad thing to say it, because Cameroon is so talented. Cameroon is such a talented country for football, and look at what they did. Look at what they did, and look at what Song did. You know, if you don't want to go to the World Cup, opt out. Say, we'll let the other guy go. What a disgrace. It was terrible. I to be honest with you, it was a great day. Great match with the Dutch and the Australians. Great match with the Chileans and the Spaniards. This was going to be another great match until Alex Song had to just basically make your stomach churn for what he did. And I do hope FIFA does punish Song for, you know, not just suspending him for the final group stage match, but to suspend him for a couple other friendlies, and maybe if Cameroon did qualify for the African Cup of Nations, have him suspended for that as well. But let's go back to something positive. Obviously, it was a great match between the Dutch and the Australians. It looked like the Aussies were going to have themselves a hell of a day, maybe catching the Dutch sleeping. And joining us right now, of course, Coach James Galanis, who helps out with women's soccer here in the U.S. in the Philadelphia area. Coach, even though Tim Cahill is going to be suspended for the final group stage match, his final days with Australia went out with a bang on a fantastic equalizer that even I couldn't believe he nailed.
Yeah, it couldn't have happened to a better person, to be honest. The guy's been a warrior for Australia for years now, and just to see him put that goal away was just a spectacle and just a great moment, you know, for Australia in general and for him more than anything, because, you know, everybody in Australia and Australians around the world, you know, we all admire him. You know, he's a fighter. He works hard. You know, he's carried the team on his back for years and years now. And, you know, we all wish they won, but, you know, it was a great goal and a great moment for Timmy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously, if you're an Evertonian supporter, you've seen him do that millions of times. Millwall, he's done that millions of times. Here with the New York Red Bulls, of course, that goal in second half stoppage time last year against the Los Angeles Galaxy on that big cross, the backwards header. I mean, that's what Tim Cahill is about. You know, as I've watched a couple of YouTube clips, Super Timmy Cahill, of course, he's called. It's sad he won't be playing in the final group stage match, but still, that's a great goal to say adieu to the golden green shirt of Australia.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Like I said, it's just a great way for him to go out. You know, if he played in the last game, the next game, it would have been great. Who knows what he would have done? But at the end of the day, you know, he's leaving, which I think, you know, possible goal of the tournament. And if he wins that, that'll be fantastic for him, just to cap off a marvelous World Cup career.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a fun way to go out, and just great stuff going. Now, I have to say this. Obviously, you knew about what Arjen Robben and Robin Van Persie did against the Spaniards. They had two goals each. Robin gets that first goal, and, of course, as we already said, Timmy Cahill equalized right away. When the penalty was called, did you have any doubts about Jednik converting the penalty or not? Because I felt that, you know, this was a big moment for Australia to maybe really threaten the Netherlands, to put a scare in them.
Yeah, I mean, watching him and his approach and the way he was looking, we had a nice close-up there. He looked a little bit nervous, and I was a little bit, you know, concerned. You know, I hope he puts it away. And if he does, like you said, it put a scare in him. And you know, I think they did put a scare in him, and they were on their way. I think their confidence would have grown as the game went on if it remained 2-1. I'm sure the coach would have changed the formation a little bit, went a little bit defensive. And unfortunately, you know, the goalkeeper, Ryan, he let that soft goal in, and that just knocked the stuffing out of him.
Absolutely. Great penalty that was taken there by Jednik. And I really felt Australia, they really needed more than just 4 minutes to keep that lead. I really thought that they were going to find a way. But, you know, once again, Robin Van Persie comes up big, made it 2-2. And then, of course, that long-distance shot from Memphis in the 68th minute, that really put the ending of a well-fought match from Australia. As you've always said, the boys never quit. They never gave up. Let's be honest. Australia is probably much better of a national team than what we saw from Cameroon to finish off the night.
Oh, definitely. You're going to get the fight out of the Aussies, you know, and this is why this coach has been brought in, and that's what was missing. And although with the previous coach they qualified, you know, the people were screaming, where's the Australian spirit? These guys aren't fighting. They're not chasing every ball down. They're not working till the last minute. They're not showing that hunger. You know, and they made the coaching change, and he's come in and he's brought in a lot of young lads, and he's instilled that that Aussie fighting spirit in him, and you saw that today. I mean, you know, technically, skill-wise, you know, we're behind the Dutch. That's the reality. But when you look at the courage that they displayed, the determination, the will, the desire, you know, they outmatched the Dutch in that department. And at the end of the day, you know, the first goal the Dutch scored, we gave the ball away. Marco Bresciano gave the ball away. And then after that, Timmy Cahill scores the goal. Then, you know, there was a sequence there where Australia missed two clear chances, which would have changed everything. And they missed it. And, you know, if they put them away and they go in for 3-1, adding the desire and the effort and the will and so on, they could have won. But at the end, you know, it's the skills that let them down. If they were a little bit sharper on the skills, they would have put those goals away. They wouldn't have given the ball away. The goalkeeper wouldn't have made that error. Everything would have been different.
Absolutely. Everything would have been changing for the best. And maybe we wouldn't talk about Spain, you know, maybe leaving the group the way they are. Maybe we talk about Australia sneaking in, possibly,
yeah.
Obviously. I mean, you know, the dreams of every Aussie around the world, obviously, thinking to themselves, hey, now we have a real shot at upsetting the Spaniards because of the way they lost to Chile. I mean, we could have seen maybe goal differential come into play if Australia did find a way to throw the wrench in the works.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Spain has just been dismantled. You know, they look so disjointed that, you know, if Australia won today, I can't even imagine the confidence that they would have gained off that. And then to go in and play against what most likely is going to be a reserve team that Spain's going to field the next game, you know, Australia would have had everything to play for. But, you know, unfortunately, it didn't work. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm on Twitter, as you know. I'm on Facebook. You know, I read articles. Everybody's super proud of the effort that these young Australian lads put in. They emptied the tank. And they made us all proud. Okay, we lost, but, you know, we know they're young and we know we're heading in the right direction. Yeah, we'd love to have shocked the world a little bit, like you said, but still very, very proud of them, and I think Australian soccer won a lot of admirers today.
Now, right now, for some of us that are not familiar with this national team, outside of those that probably play in the EPL or do play in the A-League or in MLS, who right now is on the verge of becoming a great player for Australia when it comes to the future qualifying rounds that's going to be over in Russia?
Well, you saw the kid Lecky,
mm-hmm.
The number 7. He's currently mm-hmm. playing in the German second division. This kid's not going to remain there. There is no way in the world. You know, you got Jetnik. He plays for Crystal Palace. He's still young. He has a lot of experience there. Davidson's a very good player. McGowan's a very good player. Spiranovic is a good player. Coming off the bench, I liked what I saw from Bosnić. I mean, these kids are all kids that have a bright future. The only issue that I see right now is they need to play in higher level teams. Do they have the potential to? Yes. Will this World Cup help them to get onto better teams? Yes. And if they do get onto better teams and play, you know, in better competition and play in some of the top leagues in the world, and we get some players playing in the Champions League, then Australia's going to be, you know, a really, really good team come Russia. There's no doubt about it. I mean, these kids are young. They're all young guys. We've got, you know, one of the youngest teams in the entire tournament. And, you know, if they do find their way, you know, like I said, into these better teams in Europe, they will improve. And with this coach at the helm, I think that, you know, they're going to do really well in Russia, and that's what this was about. They re-gutted the whole team. They got rid of the older generation. They brought in these young guys. Everybody knew that they're not going to go out there and win, But everybody just wanted to see the Australian spirit, which we saw, and give these kids the experience, which they're getting, and we're building for the future. So it's working, and everyone's happy. Everyone's happy in Australia, and all the real soccer fans of Australia, they're thrilled with the direction that this team's going.
Just out of curiosity, Coach, I don't know if you've been back home or not. I know you reside in the Philadelphia area, but if you can tell us your honest opinion about the A-League, obviously it's been, five, six, 7 years, I would assume,
mm-hmm.
that the Australian
mm-hmm.
A-League's been around. I don't want you to try to compare it to MLS, obviously, but in your mind, are they progressing the right way, or do you think more needs to happen?
That's a big, big, big conversation. I think they're doing some things right, and I think they're doing things wrong. You know, as far mm-hmm. as, you know, marketing the game, the organization itself that runs the game, I think they're doing a lot of good things. You know, it's growing in popularity. You know, they're attracting successful business owners that are buying these teams, that are able to invest and bring over some quality players. I think the issue is that, you know, once a good player emerges, they take off and they go to Europe. Then, you know, the bigger issue, I think, is the development of the youngsters. I don't think that we're really developing the players as good as what we should be over there. We're not developing crafty soccer players, guys that can unlock defenses with individual brilliance. We're developing good athletes, good hard-working soccer players, disciplined, and people that are physically fit, but I don't see enough players with super individual skill that will, you know, turn the world upside down, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But how is it compared? It's like, you don't want me to compare it like the MLS, but guess what?
Well,
it is like the MLS.
It is. It is.
It's
okay.
It's very, very similar. It's growing. It's new. You know, they're relying on some foreign players to come in and you know, spark it up a bit, give it a bit of marketing value. You know, they've got the better players are overseas, although the MLS now is starting to bring them back. The better players are still playing overseas. And what's left is veterans that are coming back from Europe, and players that couldn't play in Europe are playing over there, and also potential youngsters that could go to Europe. So that's what the league's about. And I think that, you know, I don't think that MLS or the A-League should be worried about players they bring out. I think they should be worried about building teams that play attractive soccer, that the style
Absolutely.
Is modern, that it is like the La Liga. It can't be aggressive and forward-thinking, just direct soccer. We need to slow down and make well-greased machines that play good football, like we saw like Chile. You know,
yep.
those guys, it's what they're doing without the ball that's making them special. And that's where I think the MLS has got to improve, and that's where I think the A-League's got to improve. The movement off the ball has got to be better.
I definitely agree with you, Coach. This is probably, like you said before, it's a proud day for Australia because they had the fighting spirit, even though the result didn't go the way you wanted it, but still you had the fighting spirit, and when you at least go out there and have that fighting spirit, it's definitely go a long way for everyone that supports the national team. That's for sure.
Oh, definitely. Australian soccer grew today, not only around the world, but also back home. I'm sure there was a lot of kids that weren't sure about soccer when at the start of today, but now they want to beat Timmy Cahill. They want to be Jed Nick and so on, and that's what it's really about.
You know what you need? You need Adriana Lima to go to Australia and change and change all the monitors from Aussie rules football to soccer. That's what needs to happen.
I have absolutely no comment on that.
You can
Although
if you
I
like.
I think it would help. I think it would help. I agree with you.
Oh, boy. Coach, thank you again. I hope to have you on one more time. I'd love to have you on one more time during the final week of June before the group stage finishes up down in Brazil. But listen, thank you again. Very happy for you that the fighting spirit was there these last two games for Australia, and definitely will be there. And I hope to meet you sometime soon as well. I'll talk to you again, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, all right?
All right. Cheers. Have a good evening.
Bye.
It's Coach James Galanis. Originally from Australia, talking about the fighting spirit of the Australian national team, those gold and green shirts with the kangaroo hopping around, and boy, oh boy, what an unbelievable day we had up till the point of despair, I'll say, of what Alex Song did, because that's not right. That's not right for the game. It's not right for Cameroon, for Africa, for the World Cup itself, nor is it right for every football supporter that watches this tournament, and they have to see that action happen. That was just an absolute disgrace. Let's go right now to take a look at the standings here for Group B. As we already said, the Netherlands and Chile are the top two sides with 6 points each. Netherlands on a +5, Chile on a +4. Australia and Spain have been eliminated. Australia with a -3, Spain with a -6. That is unbelievable. The next Group B games, of course, will be on Monday, June the 23rd. Netherlands will face Chile for the right to win Group B. Meanwhile, Australia and Spain looking for pride. But I would have to say Australia would have a little bit more under their belt than the Spaniards would. In Group A, now that it's all finished, we have Brazil and Mexico. They are tied with 4 points each, but Brazil leads on the differential by a +2. Mexico on a +1. Croatia getting their win today against the Cameroon team. They are, of course, 5-4, 3 against on a +2. Cameroon, no points at all on a -5. Here is what is going to happen when Brazil faces Cameroon and Mexico faces Croatia. Mexico, in my opinion, is in trouble in their match if the Croatians are going to play the way that they have these last two games. The only way Mexico is going to survive this is if Ochoa has another fantastic match, and then at the same time, if they draw. Do I see Cameroon upsetting Brazil and knocking them out? Because if that does happen, the differential would be in favor of Croatia if it's a draw. If Brazil loses and Croatia draws Mexico, Brazil is done. They're out. And that would be the biggest upset of them all, outside of Spain being eliminated after two group matches in the FIFA World Cup. This has been an interesting World Cup. It's been a fantastic World Cup. The USA has been an unbelievable, great time. Obviously, some interesting things have been going on in training for Portugal. Cristiano Ronaldo right now, I don't know if these reports are true. Let me just say this right now. I don't know if these reports are true. But obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo has a bit of an injury in his right knee. Or his left knee. One of his knees. He has an injury in the knee. It's more like tendonitis. The reports are coming out saying, if Ronaldo will continue to play on that injured knee, it could be a career-threatening injury. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting what's going to happen when the USA plays Portugal contra Tau. I know I butchered his name. I apologize for that. Conetrao, of course, done with an injury. Adriana, done with an injury. Pepe suspended for this matchup for the United States. And will it be four players out for the Portuguese when the United States faces them next on Sunday, June the 22nd? That is the big question right now when you are thinking like an American player. If the United States could, for the first time that I can remember, getting two wins within the group stage. Maybe it happened. I don't think it happened in 94 when they were the host. I know there's a draw, there was a win, I think there was a loss, but they went ahead on goal differential, I believe. I might have to double check on that, but still, there is plenty of time to wonder what is going to happen when the United States faces Portugal this coming Sunday, 6 o'clock at night. And I'm telling you right now, everyone, it's going to get interesting. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, Group C action tomorrow. Group C action tomorrow, Colombia will be facing the Ivory Coast, Japan will be facing Greece, and then the big Group D match, Uruguay taking on England. Uruguay is upset that they lost to Costa Rica. They have nobody to blame but themselves. England must be aware that Uruguay is on the rampage, and it's going to happen. In Group C, I think the Greeks can handle the Japanese. I think the Greeks can go out there, and they can pull out a win to make it interesting, depending on the result between Colombia and the Ivory Coast. Because even a draw by Colombia against the Ivory Coast can also be interesting if Greece does take care of the Japanese. And I think the Greeks can take care of the Japanese, and I think the Japanese will be out of this tournament by tomorrow night. I also believe Colombia is going to be a very, very tough team. They look strong. They look good. Obviously, no Falcao. But still, Falcao is not Colombia. It takes a group effort. We're going to see what's going to happen here as we go forward in this World Cup. You know, this has been an unbelievable World Cup so far. Just an unbelievable scene today down in Brazil in these last three games. Three more games, of course, coming up tomorrow. We'll have Mario Cisfatos on the Greek national team, and we'll have my good friend Gary Gazza-Richards, the former Fox soccer analyst, coming on the show, talking about what England did or what they will be doing against the Uruguayans. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, Carter Krishna not available today. With World Soccer Talk duties. Hopefully we'll have him on tomorrow. But once again, everybody, this is what we're all excited for. We're all excited for the World Cup. There's been one terrible scoreless draw. There's been one fantastic scoreless draw. We've seen goals coming out of nowhere. We've seen a goal scored within 30 seconds, of course, courtesy of Clint Dempsey. We've seen dramatic late goals coming out of nowhere, like what the Swiss did to their opponents, to what the Belgians did to the Algerians. And, of course, we cannot forget the goal by John Brooks off the corner from Graham Zuzi, 86th minute on the near side. how he bent that ball and he heads it into the net. I haven't stopped watching the Clint Dempsey goal on my DVR, and I haven't stopped watching the John Brooks goal on my DVR. Those two were the best fucking goals I've – oh, did I just curse? I guess I did, because guess what? I can do it. It's internet radio, and I meant it. Those were the two best goals I've ever seen a U.S. player have, maybe since I would say the Landon Donovan winner against Algeria in the last group stage match of the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. That, my friends, was an awesome goal. These two were an awesome goal. And I just want to go back to that game between the U.S. and Ghana. You know, that's the first time in this game the United States actually had a lead. Do you know that was the first time that the United States had a lead on Ghana? Not just once, but twice. That goes to show you how big these World Cups are. And Jurgen Klinsmann did a great thing, you know, giving John Brooks that opportunity because he needed a center back, and it was the side where Beisler couldn't play. Thankfully, Beisler will be able to play against Portugal. Apparently, I haven't seen an official report yet on Jozy Altidore. Signs are saying from speculation, and once again, I'm saying speculation because I have not seen anything permanent or a real report coming out saying that Altidore won't be playing on Monday. But I would have to, or excuse me, on Sunday night, I would have to say that if Altidore is able to go, I don't think he would be able to go in for the full 90. I think they would probably use him as a substitute if he's ready to go, more like a substitute. But if he's not ready to go, I have confidence in Wondolowski. I have confidence in Aaron Johansson that will do a good job pairing up with Clint Dempsey. That's the situation. That's the situation in front of us. That's the situation right now going on. And I really, really believe, I really, really believe that the one of those moments of, you know, defining what this American national team will really bring. If Ronaldo does not play, that's a big blow to Portugal. Even though they're still a talented side and they still have enough. They still have enough to go out there and to perform the way they should. Sometimes technical ability and great play does not mesh well if your mental state is not all the way there. And the truth of the matter is this. I think at this particular point in time, if Ronaldo's going to be there, Portugal will be fine. If Ronaldo's not going to be there, they are in trouble on the mentality of the game. They are fantastic players. They are well-groomed, very technical, savvy players. Portugal. But I've always said this many times. You can have all the talent in the world. If you're not mentally stable enough to do this, then you will falter very, very badly. That is what I will say right now. You talk to Luis Figo, Conceição, Rui Costa, Paulo Sousa, what happened back in 2002 in the first game against the United States in South Korea. You go ahead and talk to them about that. Thanks to head coach James Galanis. Thanks to Juan Arango. This has been the 46 Fire Special FIFA World Cup Review Show Day 7. Join me tomorrow night, same time, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific, as we talk about another day, another wonderful day of Brazil in the FIFA World Cup. Thank you. Bye-bye for now, and enjoy your football. Take care, everybody.